We're going to have such fun. We're going to have such fun at this session. You know, this is one of those topics where you got to laugh because otherwise you'd cry. The topic is tobacco industry sponsorship of the arts, how best to break the link. I'm Alan Blum. I'm a family physician in the University of Alabama and School of Medicine, and I started a group called Doctors Out of Care in 1977, and also used to edit the New York State Journal of Medicine, which published the first theme issues on tobacco. I'm joined this afternoon by absolutely the best and the brightest outside of Stan and Greg and all these other folks that are here, and Jean and everybody else in the room. But the buzz, Anna, is about you and the kids that you bring to this meeting and the people that you bring to this meeting, Ken. And you're going to hear a lot about the future of this issue, I think, through you two. You're indefatigable, you're tireless, and you're creative, and you're going to talk more about the situation with the arts and possibly ways in which we can counteract it. And Roger Valdez will also, he'll conclude the day with absolutely the most innovative and special program that I'm aware of in the United States. It's very sophisticated, very unusual, and so we'll leave it at that for the moment. The first presentation is my own, and it's entitled Artists as Ashtrays, A History of Tobacco Sponsorship of the Arts. What I would like to do today is to allude to a book called Privatizing Culture, Corporate Art Intervention Since the 1980s by Chin Tao Wu. This was, I believe, her doctoral thesis. And it illustrates in great detail the whole issue of corporate sponsorship of the arts. We're not just talking about tobacco sponsorship. But she starts with a premise, not a necessarily a 20th century or 21st century premise, of cultural capital as opposed to economic capital, and how social status and social value that accrue to a company that engages in cultural practices. So by the time you read her book, you realize that there is no differentiation between corporate sponsorship of an art exhibition and any other business decision that that any industry does. But the reason for focusing on the tobacco industry is obviously because we're all interested in that one, and because it was the very first. It laid the cornerstone for corporate sponsorship of the arts back in 1958 in Louisville when Philip Morris sponsored a small concert. I'm going to look at the issue of social climbing, of tax advantages, of the use of the term philanthropy, of the phasing out of government sponsorship and the influx of corporate money, especially the use by Philip Morris of this. How, through diversification of the industry, Philip Morris buying up food and other products, now through sponsorship can create an extra synergy by having cultural sponsorships lead into food, such as in this city, Kraft is a major sponsor. It sponsors children's programs, it sponsors arts, Hunger for the Arts or Arts for Hunger or whatever. It's a major program coming out of the Kraft division, which was originally a food company located in Chicago, taken over in a hostile takeover in the mid-80s by Philip Morris. But now you have this wonderful corporate synergy of Marlboro equals Kraft equals arts. I want to talk about a specific example in New York City, which is the proof positive of what we're saying, that this is not an innocuous thing. And show obviously how even within the very corporations art has emerged, such as the Philip Morris or the Whitney Museum of Art at Altria. They literally have a miniature museum of art that they've located as a branch office of the Whitney Museum of Art. The Guggenheim and the Whitney are now known in the arts field as trying to brand their museums and create international identities for them, and Altria, or formerly Philip Morris, AKA, formerly known as Philip Morris, was the first to go that venture. And Anna is going to elaborate more on the ASEAN Awards, the way in which Philip Morris has literally bought up the marginalized countries, the countries that have been marginalized by Western culture. Philip Morris has just had open season at probably pennies on the dollar for what they're spending in this country through the sponsorship of major awards in several countries. I've even learned that the origins of Philip Morris's sponsorship led them in the 1970s to get a niche where they were leading other corporations into this. I always assumed that they were first on the block and they just wanted to be at the top of the heap, but no, through some advertisements I've found in a company employee publication that I acquired, in their own Philip Morris, this is their company newspaper, They described the purpose of their corporate ad campaign, of their art sponsorships, was to be able to educate other corporations into doing this and to see just how much goodwill they could build in the public community. And lastly, I'm going to allude to censorship. This first image is perhaps the earliest image I've been able to find that shows the way in which a tobacco company was able to appreciate the benefit of associating itself with the arts. This comes from the British American Tobacco, the Imperial Tobacco Company in England. Their monthly employee magazine called Smoke Signals, and they put a prima ballerina on the cover, and they had a whole article on how the arts is important in life. It wasn't necessarily their sponsorship of it, although they did suggest that they would be involved one day in the actual sponsorship. They were not doing it. This is in 1954. They were considering it at that time. I came across this cartoon on the New Yorker, and a Genghis Khan-like figure is being told, all I'm saying is giving a little something to the arts might help our image. There's a Gilbert and Sullivan play, Rudigour, where the bad guy is a terrible tyrant, and he says, I get my bad deeds done over early. The rest of the day, I do good. And that's somewhat of what we're talking about with this. But if you look at this conglomerate, this was an old shopping guide that I got at an annual meeting of Philip Morris, one of the things that they had to every shareholder. It's just this could be a painting that could hang in any museum. This just shows, I guess this would be the image I would summarize the 20th century in. You know, all the food that they've surrounded themselves in as a layer of sheep's clothing of diversification around the central focus where your eye goes to Marlboro. The profit of Marlboro is more than all of the combined profit of the 2,000 Kraft General Foods products combined. Now, that may not be precisely true today, but it was 10 years ago. Philip Morris, as proud as they are about their sponsorship of the arts, issued a 130-page book, I could only bring this amount of it, Philip Morris and the Arts, to commemorate their 40th anniversary. This is two paragraphs from what they wrote. Philip Morris has grown from a small tobacco company with roots in the American South to the largest consumer packaged goods company in the world, with operations in over 200 countries and territories and more than 150,000 employees. Our cultural program is an integral part of our business and our corporate culture. Additionally, we devote our philanthropy to programs in the areas of hunger, domestic violence awareness, AIDS, and the environment. When appropriate, we link programs in those focus areas with the arts in order to generate community awareness and involvement in important social issues. I mean, they're spilling the beans right there. They're using the arts as a vehicle to cover their true identity. Going to a black expo in Houston, Texas, I came across this. This was actually an exhibition for African-American entrepreneurs, and convenience store makers might have been attracted to those displays of the profit makers. Meanwhile, out on the street, you know, there's your typical, this was a couple of years ago before the Master Settlement in Washington, D.C. You know, that's your street level image. But the same company, right down the street from that, was sponsoring Benson and Hedges World Music Gallery. They just took over a city park, great music, getting people in there, not even passing out free samples, but just building that brand identity for Benson and Hedges through something good. Another refined example of this is the use of billboards. A Robert Rauschenberg exhibition. This was when the company became Philip Morris Companies Incorporated. No prohibition. This was after the Master Settlement. No prohibition on that. Getting down and dirty, in the 80s, they were not at all afraid to sponsor it under their own name in ethnic communities. And this one in Albuquerque. Incidentally, they did this several places around the state. So this is not just a one-day-a-year event for Cinco de Mayo or the September holiday as well. They're in Houston in 1991, my colleague Eric Solberg and I went to 41 tobacco sponsor events that we personally attended in the city of Houston. We're talking big events. We're also talking events like the Hispanic Journalists Association or La Raza or the NAACP National Conference. And their presence in corporate schmoozing was there invariably. They were always at any kind of major national meeting that had anything to do with ethnic minorities. They further emphasized the ethnic theme in the sponsorship. They literally resurrected Frida Kahlo. Philip Morris took her back to life. This was not someone who had been repopularized until Philip Morris did a whole series of promotions for the exhibition that they sponsored and paid for Frida Kahlo. This is the Museum of Women in the Arts in Washington, D.C. This exhibition and many others sponsored by that company was also in that museum and others. In this city, I just remembered, my first involvement with this issue was when the Chicago Historical Society sponsored the National Archives touring exhibition of baseball greats. And this was artifacts from the National Archives having to do with baseball and sports. Autographs and baseball cards and historic items and photographs and so forth. And I stood up at the annual meeting of the Historical Society and I said, I think it's pretty sad. And by the way, they had ashtrays with cigarettes. This was around 1980, 81 at the meeting. And you could smoke at that time in the Chicago Historical Society. And I just stood up and I said, you know, I just at least want to be a voice saying I think it's very inappropriate for you to associate America's national pastime with the leading cause of death and disease. And I sat back down. And there was a total silence in the room. And afterwards, the director of the museum came up to me and says, I want to speak to you, very loudly so everybody could hear it. And he literally pushed me off into a side room, and I thought he was going to have my head. And he said, you know, I can't thank you enough for what you just did. He said, they've made my life miserable. They've taken over our museum. Notice where the National Archives was. The National Archives was in fine print. Every other co-sponsor, because there were trucking companies, there were all sorts of people that contributed to the making of that exhibition that you could hardly see their name. Everything was Philip Morris. He said they sent a whole crew out here. They placed the ashtrays. They placed the cigarettes. They literally took over my museum. I'm so sorry I ever let them in. The range of sponsorships doesn't just extend to museum exhibitions, although that's been the predominant one. I have the most arcane collection, perhaps in the universe, of Philip Morris-sponsored art exhibitions. And the reason why I collected these things is for the introductions. The most famous one they ever did was a combined exhibition of Braque and Picasso in the 1980s. And literally, in the introduction, it says that for Picasso and Braque to have become famous artists and great artists, they had to have taken risks. And as we all know, not taking risks in life is the greatest risk of all. It's signed president of Hamish Maxwell, chairman of Philip Morris. Dance. This cigarette company was the very first corporation in the United States to sponsor dance in 1972 in Richmond, Virginia. There's not a single major ballet company from the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, which is probably the most exciting thing you could ever see in theater. I know that when I've gone to that, obviously to monitor what they do, it's just riveting. You can see, I've never seen audiences as responsive to anything as to the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. But the Joffrey, the American Ballet Theater, just about every major name you've ever heard of in ballet. And they sponsor scholarships. They have student scholarships in ballet. Merce Cunningham, Paul Taylor, Martha Graham, you name every major ballet. That's almost an exclusive for them. Theater. They've underwritten, in this city, the Chicago Children's Theater, Playwrights Horizons, contest for playwrights and underwriting for playwrights. Music, the Boys and Girls Choir of Harlem, to give just one example. Puppet festivals all over the world, and film festivals. Arts and educational audience development, Landmark Preservation Council of Illinois, the Smithsonian Japanese Artifact Collection, Arts Against Hunger, Kraft Foods, Art Discovery Program. Conferences and symposia providing outstanding opportunities for advanced students, arts experts, and community leaders to learn from each other and create a better environment for the arts. Lewis Harris surveys on the arts have been funded by Philip Morris. Again, contrast that image with the street image right down the street. I've taken these as neutral sites, but these were much more predominant in ethnic minority communities. The Guggenheim, perhaps their leading partner in New York City, although, you know, again, it's low-key, but they sponsor all sorts of creative and innovative programs for new artists. This was called the Whitney Museum of Art at Philip Morris. Now it's been reconfigured as the Whitney Museum of Art at Altria. They're not very good. It's interesting, but they are as well-publicized as any art exhibitions in New York City. In 1984, the Metropolitan Museum of Art sponsored the Vatican Art Treasures. And a group of us went Gina Carlson and New Jersey Gasp and I in sub-zero weather. It was probably the coldest day of that year. And we led what we call a house call. We don't call them picket demonstrations or whatever. And we had things like Philip Morris Destroys Healthy Bodies 12 Ways and all sorts of puns on the arts. And again, this was that... So the New York Times asked the Archdiocese, how could you permit the Vatican art treasures to be sponsored by a cigarette company? And the spokesman for the New York City Archdiocese says, no, that's not Philip Morris, the cigarette company, that's Philip Morris International. So we still are trying to figure that one out. And this is the most famous of all the ones that they've done. This was from the Museum of Modern Art. I think, actually, I would say the Museum of Modern Art is worse than the Guggenheim because it's you can't even get into that museum. It's so in, it's out.